The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start with the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal today, beginning with our first story written by Kate Tracy, Raleigh's FMI staffs up at the Dillon. Consulting firm that dates to 1953 expands, targets $100 million in revenue. A professional services firm in downtown Raleigh is expanding its office footprint as it looks to double its headcount. FMI Corporation, a management consulting and investment banking firm that dates to 1953, is taking over its entire floor at 223 Southwest Street in the Dillon Building to accommodate its growing staff. The firm currently occupies 20,598 square feet and will take the rest of the floor to bring its total footprint to 26,458 square feet by the end of January. "It's just time for us to grab that before someone else does," said Chris Daum, FMI president and CEO. The firm originally moved into the Dillon in 2018 from offices off Glenwood Avenue. Daum said the move has paid off as more clients come to visit FMI at its downtown office than they did at its prior facility. FMI now has 11 employees working out of the warehouse district space, a figure that Daum said will double in the next 12 to 18 months. FMI's revenue has been growing by 10% annually for the last decade and is approaching $100 million this year, Daum said. "Raleigh being our corporate headquarters, a significant number of our staff additions will be here in Raleigh and in this floor space, so I expect this floor plate to be full within the next 18 to 24 months," Daum said. FMI also has offices in Denver, Houston, and Tampa. Across the country, the firm employs approximately 205 people. "We expect to double that headcount over the next 5 years, and half or more of that will be here in the Triangle," he said. Emol Doc Fales, who was a professor at NC State University, founded FMI in 1953 as a way to help students and small contractors build more profitable businesses. Incentives still flow, but new projects are slow. North Carolina's film grant program is not matching the pace of previous years. That's the headline on our next article, written by Lauren Onisorge. With shows like The Waterfront and The Runarounds now streaming, Wilmington, long known as Hollywood East, is getting more attention. What it's not getting, however, is a bundle of new series shooting there. The state is attracting productions, just not at the pace of years past. The North Carolina Department of Commerce recently announced grants to 3 television streaming series and 4 independent feature-length films. The productions are expected to spend more than $131 million and create more than 3,800 jobs. But Johnny Griffin, director of the Wilmington Regional Film Commission, said it's quiet in Wilmington right now with no new project scheduled to shoot. Thriller film Pretty Ugly was shot in Wilmington over the summer. Atlanta has also seen fewer cameras rolling as some projects have shifted overseas to save on production costs. Dark Horse Stages in Wilmington has spent millions transforming an old beverage warehouse into a stage complex for film projects, opening a set of stages last year. As of 2024, co-founder Kirk Engelbright estimated sinking $28 million into the complex near Wrightsville Beach. Earlier this year, the studio teamed up with Greenville entrepreneur Mr. Beast, the new stage's first major production. There have been recent projects. Last month, there was a call for extras in Wilmington for an ABC pilot dubbed R.J. Decker. The show follows a disgraced newspaper photographer turned private investigator and will star Scott Speedman. It was among the productions to receive millions in recent film incentives. According to Commerce, the most recent grants awarded for TV streaming series, the R.J. Decker pilot, $2.8 million to film in the Wilmington area. Season 2 of Beast Games, $15 million to film in and around Pitt and New Hanover counties. And Top Chef, Season 23, $2.5 million to film in the Charlotte region. And for feature-length films, Driver's Ed, $1.8 million to shoot in locations in New Hanover, Pender, and Orange counties. Bad Counselors, $2 million to film in Cabarrus and Mecklenburg counties. The Bard, $4.6 million to shoot in the Piedmont Triad area. May and the Woodsman, approved for a grant of up to $412,500 to shoot in the Piedmont Triad and Northwest Prosperity Zones. According to the North Carolina Film Office, 55 film productions generated more than $302 million in direct in-state spending in 2024. It was the second highest year-end total since 2015, when the state's current film grant program began. And our next article is written by Ben Tobin. Battle brews over data center project in Tarboro. Stakes are high as developer fumes over town's denial of a data center proposal. Shortly after midnight on September 9, the crowd at a Tarboro Town Council meeting erupted in applause as all but one council member voted to reject a special use permit that would have allowed a $6.4 billion data center project to move forward. The decision may be short-lived. Dan Schaefer, one of the members of Energy Storage Solutions LLC, the applicant for the proposal, said his company is planning to file a lawsuit against the Edgecombe County town. They didn't follow proper parliamentary procedures, Schaefer said about the town council, and the decision caused imminent financial loss. Both of these things make us eligible for an emergency appeal. The case is part of a larger trend of data center developers eyeing North Carolina. In Tarboro, the developer says the project will create 500 jobs, but some residents fear it could cause noise pollution and lead to property values decreasing. According to Tarboro's Unified Development Ordinance, or UDO, applicants have 30 days after the council's decision is filed with the town clerk to appeal to the Edgecombe County Superior Court. Tarboro Town Manager Troy Lewis said the council followed proper procedures with its hearing, which stretched over the course of two council meetings in August and September. The town of Tarboro feels that it followed proper procedure and protocol in conducting the special use hearing, Lewis wrote in an email. I am not aware of any pending litigation at this time, so I cannot comment on any specific issues that Mr. Schaefer may have. Should a lawsuit against the town be brought, the town will respond appropriately to any claims. According to Neil Gosh, a land use and zoning attorney who has represented applicants in special use permit cases for Morningstar Law Group in Durham, a special use permit application varies greatly from a traditional rezoning application. A special use is supposed to be a use which has already been determined to be an okay use in a particular zoning district, provided you meet a certain set of standards, Gosh said. If you meet the standards, you're entitled to the special use permit. It should not be political. Tarboro's UDO lays out four conditions that must be met: will not endanger the public health and safety, will not injure the value of adjoining or abutting property, will be in harmony with the area in which it is located, and will be in conformity with the land use plan and other plans. A big point of contention for Schaefer is the manner in which Tarboro Mayor Tate Mayo recused himself from the hearing during the meeting earlier this month and said the project presents serious risks for our town. Schaefer claims that Mayo made prejudicial statements against us before recusing himself. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Museum exhibit features Rembrandt. New exhibit highlights art, Jewish culture from time when Netherlands ruled. Rembrandt van Rijn moved to Amsterdam as a brilliant young painter and landed elite clientele. He married Saskia, the daughter of a judge, and lived in the center of town when the Netherlands was the heart of Europe. Michelle Frederick, associate curator of European art for the North Carolina Museum of Art, said his genius is evident in his work, especially the way he paints light and darkness. It's really captivating, and he has a special talent for capturing human emotion, he said. Acquiring European art, and Dutch art in particular, was a priority when the General Assembly gave the fledgling museum $1 million in 1947. William Valentiner, the first director, grew up in Germany and had a deep understanding of European art. He thought he'd landed some of Rembrandt's work, but the paintings, it was later determined, were by others. But Rembrandt and Esther are on stage now as the museum, the Book of Esther in the Age of Rembrandt exhibition through March 8th. It features objects from across the globe that date to when the Netherlands flourished. Frederick said the biblical figure of Esther, a heroine for the Jewish people, drew much attention in that period because the Netherlands saw itself as emerging as independent from Spanish influence. "It's this scrappy little country," she said. "They burned very, very brightly for this period. They were the center of the world. Jews flocked to Amsterdam because they were treated fairly, with relative religious freedom and economic opportunity. The exhibition features 121 objects, including four Rembrandts, one painting of Esther, and three sketches. As for Rembrandt himself, he had a difficult life. Saskia died at the age of 29, and Rembrandt, after financial trouble, sold her grave to raise funds. His last home was on the outskirts of town, and the ground floor is now a tattoo parlor." Wegmans ups its food offerings with hot bowls. Wegmans has a big following in the Triangle, and now the grocery chain based out of New York is getting an upgrade. The four local locations will add a hot bowls program that features Mediterranean, Latin, Asian, and other flavors for its lunch and dinner bowl dishes. The goal is to be ready by end of November, according to a company spokesperson. Construction will be done at night. The addition adds to the vibrant food scene already found at Wegmans stores, where options include the burger bar and a more Italian restaurant and lounge. Cybersecurity firm takes more Durham space. A cybersecurity unicorn is nearly doubling its office space in downtown Durham. Tanium, that's spelled T-A-N-I-U-M, whose technology works to help IT operations identify, manage, and execute on issues at scale, started in the Triangle with a handful of local employees about a decade ago. Today, it employs nearly 150 in Durham. Now, the company is expanding to nearly 50,000 square feet of office space by filling another floor in the 555 Mangum building, where it initially took 25,000 square feet. Elon acquires Charlotte University. Elon University is making a major move into Charlotte after an announcement of what is essentially an acquisition of Queens University, located in Myers Park in the heart of the city. The Charlotte Business Journal reported that plans call for the private universities to finalize a definitive merger agreement in December. Accreditation is expected to follow on June 6th. If approved, the Queens Board will remain in place through 2029. The future combined 37-member board will include 10 representatives from Queens. Elon, based in Alamance County, already has a part-time law school in Charlotte. Details such as the combined university's new name are still being hammered out. "We don't see bringing the two universities together and dramatically making any changes around tuition and student selectivity," says Jesse Curidan, interim president and CEO of Queens. An undergraduate degree at Queens costs $65,151 per year before student aid and scholarships. And finally, RDU expands global reach with Dublin flight. Aer Lingus is betting on Raleigh-Durham International Airport with the new nonstop flight to Dublin set to start in April. The flight, which will take off five times a week, is a major score for RDU, which punches above its weight when it comes to transatlantic service, evidenced by existing nonstops to Paris, London, Germany, and Iceland. The new flight comes after years of negotiations between RDU and Aer Lingus. It also comes after Aer Lingus picked Nashville, Tennessee over RDU for the Dublin service. Aer Lingus is owned by International Airlines Group, which also owns British Airways. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, beginning with Lauren Onosorge's page, Transportation and Technology. The first headline, Mexico City flight at risk of ending. Trump administration ends joint venture between Delta Aeromexico. A joint venture between Delta Airlines and one of RDU's newest international carriers, Aeromexico, is ending as the U.S. Department of Transportation under President Donald Trump has ordered its suspension. What it means for Aeromexico's flights at RDU, its nonstop to Mexico City, and the upcoming launch of its service to Cancun is unclear. Previous regulatory filings have indicated that the partnership's unraveling would result in Aeromexico slashing its U.S. network. In February 2024, the airlines filed a document with DOT that identified the RDU Mexico City flight as among 23 services at risk of being canceled if the partnership halted. At the time, the Cancun service had not been announced. Aeromexico is the only airline serving RDU Mexico City, while American Airlines and Delta both fly to Cancun. In a statement September 16, Delta said, we are disappointed that the Department of Transportation has chosen to terminate its approval of the strategic and pro-competitive partnership between Delta and Aeromexico, a decision that will cause significant harm to U.S. jobs, communities, and consumers traveling between the U.S. and Mexico. Aeromexico said it regrets this decision, but that customers will not be impacted as the code share agreements remain intact. The order, issued September 15, states the action is necessary because of ongoing anti-competitive effects in U.S. Mexico City markets that provide an unfair advantage to Delta and Aeromexico as two predominant competitors and create unacceptable actual and potential harm for stakeholders, including consumers. The order notes Delta's existing 20% equity stake in Aeromexico. It also says that if conditions improve, regulators will take those improved conditions into account at that time. Carry exec wins $5 million judgment over horse. A Florida court has sided with the co-founder of Fortnite, developer Epic Games, issuing a $5.5 million judgment in a dispute over an Olympic horse. The Rain Family LLC had alleged that former Olympic gold medalist Eric LeMays misled it into purchasing an elite horse that later represented Canada at the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. The LLC is tied to Mark Rain, the vice president of Epic Games, and his wife, Tara Dow Rain. Rain is described in court documents as an unsuspecting participant in the dispute between LeMays, a horse show jumper, and his other investors. Initially a defendant, the Rain family settled with plaintiffs before filing its own cross-claim against LeMays. According to court filings, in 2021, LeMays sold Mark Rain a 50% stake in a young show horse for $425,000, with an additional $100,000 paid for its future expenses. The value of the horse, named Nika V.D. Bishop, rose, and LeMays offered Rain about approached Rain about selling his remaining 50% stake for nearly $2.3 million, a deal that closed at the end of 2021. But other investors claim LeMays was misrepresenting horse ownership stakes, and they filed a lawsuit. The Rain family alleged LeMays falsely said he had secured consent from the other investors for a deal. Atlantic Avenue to close for upgrades, a long-awaited revamp for a portion of Raleigh's Atlantic Avenue between New Hope Church Road and Highwoods Boulevard could be complete within months. The project, designed to improve safety in an accident-prone area just outside the Beltline, has been marked by delays and setbacks, but now the project is entering its final stages. Starting this month, paving will begin on the southbound lanes, followed by similar work on the northbound lanes. Curb, gutter, and sidewalk installations are scheduled for this fall. Safety is the driving force behind the project, according to Benjamin Pasil, a supervisor with the City of Raleigh's Roadway and Construction Division. City crash data shows multiple accidents at the Ingram Drive intersection due to poor visibility. As part of the improvements, the intersection is being raised to address sight distance issues. And finally, NCDOT gets new leader as Hopkins decides to retire. After more than 30 years with the North Carolina Department of Transportation, Secretary Joey Hopkins is stepping aside. Hopkins was appointed secretary in 2023. He is set to retire October 1st. In his place, Governor Josh Stein has named Daniel Johnson as the next secretary. Johnson is a Navy veteran and current NCDOT deputy secretary and general counsel. He steps into the role at a critical moment. Hopkins had prioritized leading infrastructure recovery efforts in western North Carolina following Hurricane Helene, which caused $5 billion in damage across the state. Johnson will need to juggle those ongoing recovery efforts alongside existing initiatives aimed at easing congestion in the growing state. That includes the complete 540 project in Wake County. And now we turn to the page written by Kaylee Thompson, Real Estate and Development. Park West Village in Morrisville to start revamp in spring. Movie theater will be torn down as retail center goes in new direction. The redevelopment of a movie theater and two restaurants at a popular retail center in Mooresville is moving forward. Real estate developer Casto of Ohio plans to start construction at Park West Village next spring, according to Shannon Dixon, Executive Vice President of Development at Casto. The B&B Theater Cinema, Bad Daddy's Burger Bar, and Witch Sandwich Shop will be demolished to make way for a mixed-use development to help increase density and add vibrancy. Park West Village is at the intersection of Northwest Cary Parkway and Chapel Hill Road. The rezoning amendment was approved in January, and the developer is in the final stages of the review process with the town of Mooresville. A preliminary site plan was approved by the town for a mixed-use building with 250 apartments, a 4,000-square-foot shared office space and clubhouse, and up to 21,000 square feet of commercial space. While the developer hasn't revealed what the commercial component will include, it intends to turn the movie theater property into experiential retail for adults and families, such as a brewery, arcade, duckpin bowling, golf simulator, or indoor golf. The development cost will be $75 million, according to town documents. B&B theaters will close before the start of construction and will not be part of the new development. In town documents, Casto said that it is taking a financial loss by keeping the theater open. The developer had explored options such as finding another theater operator or redoing the interior. There is an AMC movie theater located in the Park Place Shopping Center directly across Cary Parkway from Park West Village. Conditions that came with the amendment to the zoning include making the mixed-use building energy efficient and making 15% of the units workforce housing for 30 years. Part of the redevelopment involves making major changes to outdoor spaces, roadways, and sidewalks. Casto will create a larger outdoor public gathering space with a permanent stage, passive recreation areas, active areas for kids, and a multi-use area for events. WeWork slashes Durham office space. WeWork has vacated half its space in downtown Durham as the co-working giant once again slashes its local office footprint. The New York company that filed for bankruptcy 2 years ago had occupied the fourth and fifth floors of the One City Center building in Durham, but at the end of May, WeWork vacated 30,000 square feet on the fourth floor and is now only using the fifth floor, according to Michael DeVarius, president of DeVarius Real Estate. This reduces the company's Durham footprint to 32,098 square feet. Excuse me. The company announced in April 2024 that it would be shrinking its space in Durham. DeVara said the company's signage will remain on the exterior of the building. WeWork's office footprint in Raleigh totals 81,000 square feet at the One Glenwood building downtown, according to LoopNet. New York developer plans project in Knightdale, a mixed-use community with hundreds of apartments and more than 50,000 square feet of commercial space could be coming to Knightdale. SR Real Estate Partners of New York has filed a rezoning application with a master plan. The mixed-use project is named Boulder Ridge and calls for 564 multifamily units and 57,500 square feet of commercial space. It would be on 34 acres at the corner of Hodge Road and Old Faison Road. SR Real Estate Partners wants to change the zoning from highway business to neighborhood mixed-use planned unit development. And finally, Cary to add 200 more homes in a new community. A new residential community is popping up in West Cary, one of the hottest areas for growth in Wake County. M&I Homes of Ohio is building Green Level Trail, a master planned community with 203 townhomes and single-family homes off Green Level West Road. Construction on the homes is well underway with 75 homes already, townhomes already built. Townhomes start at $542,000 and single-family homes at $817,000. So far, 8 townhomes have been sold or are under contract, while 77 single-family home sites have been sold or are under contract. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Creedmoor could add 650 more homes. Sewer capacity has held back the town, which hasn't grown like others. A 650-home community is being pitched for Creedmoor, but don't expect homes to come online anytime soon due to sewer capacity issues. Raleigh-based Gander Development has submitted a conditional rezoning application to the city for more than 247 acres off Mary Lane in Granville County. Durham-based LLC Mary Lane Holdings owns the land, which has an assessed value of slightly above $41,000, according to the Granville County tax records. The subdivision will be called Cedar Creek. Adam Manns, head of property acquisitions for Gander, said that the community will have a maximum of 650 homes, which will be a blend of different housing types. He said that home construction is tied to sewer availability, which is not expected until between 2027 to 2028, and that sales prices will reflect the market at the time of construction. We like Creedmoor because it is a unique small town in that it provides calm and convenient small town living with easy access to major employers around the Triangle, Mann said. Creedmoor, neighboring Butner, and the southern Granville County area as a whole have faced sewer capacity issues, meaning the area, despite being right along Interstate 85, has not been able to support as much new housing and commercial real estate development as some other communities around the area. But change is on the way. The South Granville Water and Sewer Authority broke ground in March on a $75 million project that will address problems with the utility and increase capacity for future growth. That project is set to wrap up in 2027 or 2028. Housing development has been picking up in the area given the cheaper cost of land. Last year, a project that could include hundreds of homes and 100,000 square feet of commercial space was approved for land between Butner and Creedmoor. Creedmoor had a population of 5,049 as of 2024, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Growth has been relatively light, even though other halo cities have exploded. Builder eyes Buies Creek for new neighborhood. An Alabama-based home builder is growing its housing stock in what is quickly becoming one of the hottest new build markets in the Greater Triangle. Davidson Homes is now selling lots for one of its newest neighborhoods, Retreat at North Main, which is located off Main Street in Buies Creek, a census-designated place in Harnett County. The neighborhood will feature 56 single-family homes that range from just shy of $300,000 to close to $346,000 for base pricing. Kim Mulder, director of land acquisitions and entitlements for Davidson Homes, said the proximity to Campbell University is a major plus for this neighborhood. "I really like this site in particular because it's very close to Campbell University," Mulder said. "It's a little less than a mile north of the university, and it has large lots. I think the average lot size is around 14,000 square feet, but it has public water and sewer. So typically, to get a larger lot, you're going with septic." She added, "It's also quick access to NC Highway 55, which gets you north into Anger and eventually up to Raleigh." The median sales price for a single-family home in Harnett County in August was $350,000, down 1.4% from the same month a year ago, according to Dorify MLS. And finally, in Lee County, developer reboots 100-acre project in Sanford. Another reboot is in the works for a mixed-use development for Sanford. Brian Richards, a partner at Urban Design Partners, a civil engineering firm headquartered in Charlotte, has filed an application with the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee for a mixed-use community on just shy of 112 acres off Colon Road, that's C-O-L-O-N, Colon Road, and US 1. The project called Oakton includes 469 housing units. Of those, 300 will be apartments and 169 will be single-family homes, according to submitted materials. Potential commercial uses consist of a hotel, a daycare, a drive-through restaurants, and retail D.R. Horton of Texas purchased the four tracts that the development is proposed for in 2021 for $8.5 million, according to Lee County deed records. This project has had several iterations over the years. In January 2024, Richards submitted a slightly different plan called Gum Forks. Instead of 469 housing units, that plan called for 583, with 136 apartments and 147 single-family homes. In April 2023, the Sanford City Council unanimously rejected a proposal that called for a roughly 600-home community on that land. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page, Healthcare and Life Sciences. Local impact of pharma cuts unclear. Novo Nordisk cutting jobs globally as it plans to grow in Johnston County. A Danish pharmaceutical company is laying off thousands of workers even as it invests billions in North Carolina. Novo Nordisk plans to cut its workforce by about 11%, equaling about 9,000 jobs, amid a slowdown in sales growth. The move comes about a year after it announced a $4 billion investment in Johnston County. More than half the cuts, about 5,000 jobs, will take place in Denmark, where Novo Nordisk is headquartered. Reports in August said the company was freezing hiring for non-business critical roles. A Novo Nordisk spokesperson at the time told Triangle Business Journal that U.S. manufacturing remains the company's top priority. Our core business is built on diabetes and obesity, and our North Carolina facilities in Clayton and Durham are essential to producing those treatments, including our $4.1 billion expansion project in Johnston County, the spokesperson said at the time. Novo Nordisk in July lowered its projections for 2025 in response to slower growth for its obesity and diabetes products, Wegovy and Ozempic. The company said the lower sales outlook for Wegovy reflects the persistent use of compounded GLP-1s, slower than expected market expansion and competition. Last year, Novo Nordisk outlined its plans to build a new facility in Clayton that would bring 1.4 million square feet of production space online, doubling the combined square footage of the company's existing three facilities in Clayton and Durham. The investment is expected to create 1,000 jobs, adding to the company's existing workforce of about 2,500 people in the region. Regarding the layoffs, Johnston County Economic Development Director Chris Johnson said local officials are unsure if or how it may affect Johnston County. As far as we know, their $4.1 billion expansion project is still a priority and progressing, he said. Oh, and also Ben Tobin contributed to that story. Health giant expands in North Carolina with $3 billion deal. One of the largest healthcare companies in the U.S. has grown its footprint in North Carolina. United Health Group has completed its $3.3 billion acquisition of Amedisys, spelled A-M-E-D-I-S-Y-S, which operates home health and hospice sites. The deal closed after the companies reached a settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice, which in 2024 sued to prevent the deal from closing due to antitrust concerns. Attorneys representing United Health in July informed the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services of the deal's expected closure. The letter identifies 20 Amedisys facilities in the state that are now part of United Health. This includes locations across Durham, Franklin, Orange, Pitt, and Wake counties. United Health subsidiary Optum in 2023 announced its acquisition of Amedisys based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but the Department of Justice sued, arguing the merger would reduce competition. A year earlier, United Health had acquired LHC Group Incorporated, another large home care provider, for about $5.4 billion. The federal government in August announced it had reached a settlement that requires United Health and Amedisys to divest 164 home health and hospice locations across 19 states and pay a $1.1 million civil penalty. Gene therapy firm grows haul to $320 million. A biotechnology company in Research Triangle Park has added to its $300 million funding round to support its ambitious gene therapy plans. Crya Therapeutics has closed a $320 million Series D funding round to advance clinical development of its lead gene therapy programs. Patient Square Capital and PremG Invest co-led the funding round with participation from other life sciences and technology investors like PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel, Narya Capital, the T1D Fund, and other long-term investors. Crya announced the completed round about a month after disclosing a $313 million raise from two investors in a regulatory filing on August 15. CREA on September 10 submitted an amended regulatory filing reporting a $320.8 million equity raise from 10 investors. The funding will support clinical trials of CREA's five lead programs targeting chronic diseases in the areas of ophthalmology, metabolic disease, and neurology. And finally, treatment center to shut down will lay off 90. A healthcare center in Durham will lay off dozens of employees when it closes next month. Carolina House Eating Disorder Treatment Center will cease operations October 9 and lay off 90 employees in the process, it said in a notification to the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The center is part of a subsidiary, CRCED Treatment LLC, of Acadia Healthcare. Acadia, in a statement, said the decision followed a careful and comprehensive review of the current landscape for the programs and services offered by the facility. Carolina House provides residential and outpatient treatment for patients with eating disorders or behavioral health needs. It anticipates terminating employees by November 8. And our next page is retail and restaurants, and this is written by Kate Tracy. Shakespeare-themed bar joins Raleigh Tower. Capulet Cocktail Club to open at 1000 Social Tower in Midtown. Let the masquerade ball begin at 1000 Social. Patrick Shanahan, the artist and filmmaker behind the restaurant Peregrine at the Exchange Raleigh development and cocktail bar Watts and Ward downtown, is taking inspiration from Shakespeare for his next venue that's opening in November. Shanahan has signed a lease for a 27,000 square foot space for the Capulet Cocktail Club, named after Juliet Capulet from the play Romeo and Juliet. The space is next to Peregrine, which Shanahan and Chef Saif Rahman opened in April at 1000 Social. From the time I opened Peregrine, we knew we were going to do it. It was just a matter of timing, he said. Guests will then walk through archways and enter the bar, which will feature a 30-foot domed ceiling that Shanahan is painting himself to depict Roman gods and goddesses for a Sistine Chapel-esque look. The bar will have the feel of an Italian disco-themed bar. I really wanted to focus on the Peregrine project to make sure we were flying before jumping into it. Shanahan is working with Moore Architecture and JCI Builders on the design and construction of the space. He said the project will cost approximately $1 million, which he's funding through private funds and a tenant improvement allowance from DeWitt Carolinas. He plans to hire approximately 10 people for the bar. Robbie Operman is Shanahan's partner in the project. Shanahan has tapped Zach Thomas, an experienced cocktail guru, whose most recent project is Boatman Spirits Company, to lead the beverage program at both Peregrine and Capulet. When Peregrine opened in April, Shanahan said an explosion of people came. We could barely keep up with it, he said. But when summer hit, Peregrine experienced a quieter summer with fewer visitors. Once mid-August came around, we started to see the swell back, and now we're back to where we were when we began, he said. With the addition of Capulet, the Exchange's retail space is continuing to fill up as other retailers like Tostique and an Italian eatery from Buongiorno and Sons Chef are close to opening. Fenton unveils hotel name, restaurant. One of the hottest developments in Cary is getting its latest addition, and it has an official name. Business and community leader September 10 celebrated the upcoming hotel at Fenton with a ceremony where Mainsail Lodging and Development, Ross Hotel Partners, and Hines unveiled the long-awaited hotel's name, the Pagemore Hotel at Fenton. The seven-story hotel, located at 465 Fenton Gateway Drive, will have 186 rooms and is set to open in the fall of 2027. Baruch, an Eastern Mediterranean restaurant, will be part of the hotel. The Pagemore will have a fitness center and a culinary theater. The developers have hired architecture and design BRPH for the project. It's Mainsail's first foray in North Carolina. The firm signed a 100-year ground lease. Durham Barbecue Restaurant has closed its doors. After 5.5 years, a barbecue chain in a popular retail area in West Durham is turning off the smokers. Moe's Original Barbecue had its final day September 12. The restaurant was at 2014 Hillsborough Road, right off 9th Street, next to longtime restaurant Vin Rouge Cafe, French Cafe and Wine Bar. We're deeply grateful to each of you who have supported us along the way. This journey wouldn't have been possible without you, the announcement said. Together, we've shared countless great meals and memories. And finally, Raleigh Food Hall up for sale. A food hall on the edge of downtown Raleigh is on the market. York Properties recently listed the Transfer Company Food Hall property for sale. Located at 500 East Davy Street, the site features 26,634 square feet on 1.12 acres, according to property records. The listing includes the space for Burial Beer Company's tap room next door. Judson McMillan and Brian Wallace with York are listing the property for the owners. Jason Queen with Monarch Property Company, and Matt Flynn. McMillan said interest is already very healthy. And now we turn to our last reporter page, this one written by Dane Huffman, on the coast. Beaches watch spending closely. Tourism sees a hiccup in 1 month, but numbers overall remain steady. North Carolina's coastal regions are watching tourism numbers closely as an uncertain economy heads into the fall, with spending beginning to tighten but visitors still flocking to the beach. Tourism along the coast exploded during the pandemic and the years after that as the price of vacation homes accelerated. In Carteret County, for example, some condominiums that sold for slightly more than $300,000 before the pandemic doubled in value, and $1 million homes became common. But that explosive growth is starting to taper off, or at least normalize. Jim Browder, the executive director of the Crystal Coast Tourism Development Authority, said June revenue from the county's room occupancy taxes was down 3%, which is roughly the drop for the fiscal year that ended June 30. "This is the first time we've had a hiccup," he said. But Browder noted that May was up 14% and July was up 4%. Labor Day, he said, was probably down a little bit. Overall, he said, people are still spending on the lodging, but spending less on extracurricular activities. Browder worked part of his career in Florida and said those markets have been impacted more by the drop in international tourists. As a result, Florida vacation areas have put more marketing emphasis on the U.S., which has impacted markets that draw more domestic visitors. Lee Nettles, the executive director of the Outer Banks Visitors Bureau, said occupancy tax revenue was stable through May, before dropping about 10% in June. "One of our key feeder markets is Washington, D.C., and quite a few of those federal employees were concerned about their future employment," Nettles said. July numbers, however, bounced back up 3%, so the market is up 1% year-to-date. Booking windows, he said, have become shorter. The Wilmington market continued to post strong numbers, with occupancy tax revenue up 5.5% for June, according to the Wilmington and Beaches Convention and Visitors Bureau. Aquarium prepares for major overhaul. A popular aquarium on the North Carolina coast will be overhauled this fall, and part of the new look will include a whopping new shark exhibit. The North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher is launching the first phase of a $65 million renovation. The aquarium will have the largest shark exhibit in the state and will also emerge as the state's largest aquarium. "We're creating new dynamic spaces that educate, connect, and empower our community," said Hap Fatzinger, director for the North Carolina Aquariums Division. The updated facility will include a rooftop sky deck. As of May, the campaign had already raised more than $60 million through public and private funds. The aquarium plans to close this fall to begin renovations. The aquarium is located south of Wilmington and just down the road from the Fort Fisher Civil War site. The aquarium first opened in 1976. The state also has aquariums at Pine Knoll Shores and on Roanoke Island. Home on 1,700 acres on market for $17 million in Beaufort County. An enormous property on the coast is on the market for a tremendous price. A 1,768-acre estate along the Pamlico River in Beaufort County is asking $17.5 million. The property, situated near Bath, includes a 5,300-square-foot lodge-style home on the waterfront. The land features more than 3 miles of shoreline along the Pamlico River, Bath Creek, and Duck Creek. The location is about 2 hours and 15 minutes from Duck in the Outer Banks. The listing price comes to nearly $10,000 per acre, and it's just the latest big price tag for private real estate at the coast. Earlier this year, a home at Wrightsville Beach hit the market for $16.1 million. The Beaufort property also has a second waterfront home and multiple outbuildings, offering versatility for a range of residential, recreational, or developmental uses, according to the listing from the Rich Company. And finally, massive home project pitched for Brunswick County. An Atlanta developer is looking to put 12,500 homes in Brunswick County, an area experiencing explosive growth. Strategic Real Estate Partners, LLC, is seeking a rezoning that would allow for redevelopment on 4,378 acres, Triangle Business Journal confirmed. The newspaper reported the firm wants to put the development along NC-87 and Town Creek Road. It would include commercial space and possibly offices. Brunswick County's population is a little over 167,000 and grew by 4.5% between 2023 and 2024, according to U.S. Census data. By 2060, the North Carolina State Demographer's Office estimates the population will be over 309,000. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column, this one featuring Clay Thorpe. In a closer look, title, co-founder and general partner of Hatteras Venture Partners, hometown Fayetteville, education, bachelor's degree, UNC Chapel Hill, master's, Harvard University, first job, launched and ran a literacy organization, first fund, closed at $2.93 million in 2001, and latest funds, recently closed 7th Core Fund at $177 million and new Hatteras Opportunity Fund 1 LP at $30 million. Over more than two decades, Hatteras Venture Partners has become one of the Triangle's most prominent investors in early-stage health technology and life sciences companies. But co-founder Clay Thorpe didn't always envision a career in venture capital. Thorpe, while a student at UNC Chapel Hill, started and ran a literacy program before later joining the Wild Acres Leadership Initiative after attending the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Thorpe envisioned a career in public service roles, such as leading foundations or colleges, but he diverted from these plans when his brother, Holden Thorpe, asked for his help in co-founding the bioinformatics firm Xanthon in 1995. Next, Clay Thorpe helped found and lead Novalon Pharmaceutical until it was acquired by Caro Bio for $106.7 million in 2000. He formed Hatteras Venture Partners with John Crumpler in 2000. The idea was to invest while also consulting for emerging companies. Since then, Hatteras has built a portfolio of 100 companies. One, G1 Therapeutics, was acquired last year by Danish drug company Pharmacosmos in a $405 million deal. The firm recently raised its 7th core fund, closing at $177 million, its largest fund yet. The firm also recently had one of its most successful exits, with Histosonics acquired for $2.25 billion. What was it like first launching Hatteras? We raised the first fund, which was a total of $2.93 million. It was mostly from our friends, our brothers, ourselves, and then a hedge fund in New York. And the last closing for the fund was on September 7, 2001, and 4 days later, we thought the world had come to an end. We had probably invested in three or four companies, and we had taken responsibility for other people's money. One of our companies was in the human capital management software area, and when people are struggling to know whether they're actually going to be in business, they weren't thinking about human capital management. But of those first six companies, Synthmatics was a raging, success. We put 30% of Fund 1 into Synthmatics. Thank God it turned out, because it otherwise would have been bad. I wouldn't be sitting here. And now you've just closed your 7th core fund and your first opportunity fund. It's all about keeping the capital flowing so that when we see these great opportunities that come across the plate, we can have capital to put in them. This business is basically three parts. It's deciding what to invest in. It's working at the board level to help steward and govern what you're in. And then it's exiting. And a lot of folks spend a lot of their time on the first part of it, but I think the second two are equally important. What's one of your most gratifying investments? I think G1 Therapeutics clearly was that. To have been on the ground floor from the very beginning and actually see, here's a drug that the founder said would do this. They showed it in cells, and they showed it in animals, and they showed it in people. Then they got approved by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and we made a great financial gain. What changes have you seen? When we first started Hatteras, there actually had been a number of companies with wins in the late 90s. And then I would say the next decade, I call it the lost decade, where capital was much harder to come by. What makes an ecosystem like Kendall Square in Boston work so well is that you have enough entrepreneurs who have enough money in their pocket. They don't have to work for pay, so they can sniff around for the best opportunity for them to start a company. And this was written by Zach Ezzone. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read the latest edition in Project Life, the Executive Health and Worker Wellness in the Triangle series, written by Connie Gentry. The latest headline, IVF demand surges as family planning evolves. As IVF becomes increasingly common, patients with rare genetic conditions have more options. Delaying the start of a family, which has been a trend for decades, is escalating. In 2023, over 37% of first-time moms were age 30 or older, compared with 32% who, as of 2016, had their first child in their 30s or beyond, per a recent report from the National Center for Health Statistics, part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older moms are the new norm, even though peak reproductive years for a woman are late teens to late 20s, according to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. A third of Americans surveyed in a Harris poll in June said they have used or plan to use fertility services, and 15% also said in vitro fertilization or IVF is part of their plan. Newlyweds Rachel and Brandon Phelps, aged 29 and 30, began their IVF journey within 2 months of their November wedding, but not because of infertility. Rachel Phelps has Li-Fraumeni syndrome, or LFS, a rare genetic condition that makes her predisposed to a broad spectrum of early onset cancers. Among people with LFS, 50% of cancers occur before age 40. According to the National Institutes of Health, their lifetime risk for cancers stands at 90% for women and 70% for men. Phelps learned in her senior year of college that she had colon cancer. Now cancer-free for 7 years, she still goes through intense screenings each year at the UNC Cancer Center. These screenings are mentally, physically, and emotionally draining. The challenges and stresses that I go through medically to make sure that I am the healthiest I can be is not something I want my future children to experience, she said. The LFS Association states anyone with LFS has a 50% chance of passing the gene mutation to their children. Additionally, Phelps has been told she has a 100% chance of developing breast cancer and should consider having a preventative double mastectomy by age 35. Brandon and I are not ready to start a family, but now we're on a time frame to be done in 5 or 6 years, so we decided to begin this process, she said. Her oncologist recommended UNC Fertility, where the couple met Dr. Colleen Milroy, Division Director and Medical Director of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at the UNC School of Medicine. Access for fertility physicians in the Triangle was really backed up when I got here, said Milroy, who joined UNC Fertility in August 2023. People were waiting up to 6 months to see a fertility doctor, and that's not the way we want to meet our community. Now the wait for new patients is 2 weeks, except for critical referrals. We developed a whole program for people like Rachel, so they are seen within 72 hours of a diagnosis or a referral from an oncology source or a high-risk OB source. If something tragic has happened, we'll get them in, Milroy said. Her recommendation was to begin the IVF process this summer, while Rachel Phelps had a break from her job as an elementary school teacher in Wake County. Regaining control. It felt like I was taking back some of my power, essentially saying, this LFS diagnosis isn't going to stop me. We're still going to have kids when we want to, Rachel Phelps said. They began July 3rd, with Brandon doing daily injections in his wife's abdomen. There's no way I could have done it myself, she said. Her eggs were retrieved July 15. Then we went through the whole process of fertilization, and the number always goes down. Originally, I had 38 eggs. 17 were fertilized, and 11 of those reached the mature stage or embryo, she said. The embryos underwent genetic testing, and the results showed 2 were not progressing as they should. 5 had the genetic marker for LFS, and 4, while they didn't indicate LFS, appeared to be higher-risk embryos. We have 3 available, 2 girls and a boy, that don't have the genetic condition I have. We just found that out middle of August, so we're still in this excited bubble about it all, she said. I didn't know how attached I would already be, and now I'm saying to my husband, because we had always planned for 2, now there are 3. Do we just have all 3? How could we choose? It's likely the choice will be made for them, driven by what is the healthiest, most viable option at the time they decide to proceed. The goal is health. We put back 1 embryo at a time, 95% to 97% of the time, because the data tells us that putting more embryos back, especially if they've been genetically tested, does not increase the chance of pregnancy. It only increases the chance of multiple pregnancy, and that is not our goal in helping build families, Milroy said. The health considerations are even greater if the mother has underlying medical conditions. Rachel only has a certain amount of low-risk embryos to be able to put back in, and each embryo doesn't guarantee a pregnancy. Each embryo gives us a great shot at pregnancy, probably between 60% and 70%, but it's not 100% guaranteed, Milroy said. There are significant issues to be considered even beyond the decisions around timing of the next step in her LFS condition. Just to get to this point, we've spent about $25,000, Phelps said. Their insurance does not cover any of the IVF. She teaches school, and her husband is a social worker. I think the pregnancy aspect will be covered, but the transfer itself, when they implant the embryo, I don't believe that will be covered under insurance, and the estimate is that the cost will be $5,000 to $6,000, she said. North Carolina is not among the states that require insurance coverage of fertility care, but Milroy said they have seen tremendous growth of insurance coverage from large employers, particularly those in the tech sector. She said it's important that the business community starts to talk about this, particularly as IVF care becomes prevalent. Across the U.S., almost 96,000 births in 2023 were the result of IVF. Doing the type of cycle that we did for Rachel, where we tested the monogenetic disorder, happens probably once or twice a month nowadays, Milroy said. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we're out of time for today. But we do want to mention that today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal, be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.